Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mintz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So we come to our annual July event, Comic-Con San Diego. With us today to preview the upcoming event is Jim Vavida of IGN.com. How are you, Jim?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. We appreciate it. So, there's this little small studio called Marvel. They're supposed to tear down the house on Saturday night in Hall H. Vanity Fair ran a small piece describing some of the things we expect to get. And, of course, we got some news today with Thor 4. So, what are your expectations for the grand Hall H presentation from Marvel Studios?
I think the safe bet is on there being a Eternals cast announcement. First of all, release dates for everything in Phase 4. Probably the Eternals cast coming out on stage to be officially announced as like the latest big team in the MCU. I would imagine Shang-Chi getting a release date and possibly the title role being announced, who's playing it. I would also expect there to be footage from Black Widow and confirmation, official confirmation that that movie actually happens because is happening because Marvel has been coy about that. I also think it's, you know, the Thor 4 news today is very exciting. So yeah, I could totally see Taika coming out on stage. He's in town, or at least he was last week for the Lion King premiere. And then I think announcements for Guardians 3, and maybe even James Gunn walking out for a wave, which would be a pretty big deal considering he was fired during last year's Comic-Con, and then dates for probably Black Panther 2 and Doctor Strange 2. I think that's about all the big ones that we're expecting. I mean, there's always the you know, surprise announcements too, like maybe they do announce an A-Force movie or something like that, or actually, yeah, Captain Marvel 2, I think, too, is probably a safe bet for an announcement, at least in terms of release date.
So, Jed, that's a lot of films, and we know that they have a lot of dates already staked out. How far out do you think they go with their Phase 4 announcement? Because I know Feige has in the past stated that he had some reservations about doing the thing that they did at the El Cid Theater, or it was the El Capitan Theater in October of 14, where they released their entire slate, and Joss Whedon was kind of bummed out because he still had Avengers Age of Ultron to come out. So how far out do you think they go? Do you think they go to 2024, or do you think we just get 2 years?
I think they go up to about probably 2022. I know Whedon was bummed out by it or whatever, but I think it's at this point it's more about sort of Disney and Marvel showing their kind of long game, and that, you know, they'll at least maybe announce like untitled Marvel whatever for this date or whatever. But I think at this point between Comic-Con and E23, where I'm expecting the streaming service to be a stronger presence there than at Comic-Con, you know, I think it's doable that we're going to get more firm news this time around than in the past. But who knows? I mean, you know, we'll see. I mean, it could be as simple as just the Eternals and Black Widow and maybe one other thing. But I think it would be weird to have that kind of presence there and not at least give us some hard news for at least the next 2 years.
Especially when you're gonna, you know, you're the show, you're the thing that everybody's there to see, basically. Remember there was a Comic-Con a few years back, and of course, you know, I'm constantly tuned into you guys' live stream, and of course y'all's reaction videos after panels, and there was a Marvel panel at one point where Feige said, "We're just talking about year X." And everybody was kind of bummed out because everybody thought they were going to get the whole thing. So it's going to be interesting because they hold all the cards. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, they could just as easily announce everything on a random Tuesday. You know, it's not It's, you know, it's just as likely for them to just, you know, announce any old day of the week too. They don't have to be tied to an event or anything like that. They've done, you know, they've increasingly kind of moved away from that. I just think for this one, since they sat out, I believe they sat out last year, every Comic-Con has now blurred into one for me. That I think they're going to have to do a little something special this year between this and D23.
Yeah, they set out last year, but as you pointed out, they had a 99.9% absence because, of course, the firing of James Gunn happened.
Yeah.
So, you were actually, I think, were you at that slate announcement in the theater in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, that I'm sure that was an interesting experience, to be sure. One more question for you from me. We are expecting to get a Game of Thrones panel at this event, as well as a Russo Brothers and Marcus and McFeely panel at this event. With the Game of Thrones panel, do you expect they will address the fan controversies and the displeasure with some of the way the final season happened? And do you expect any kind of surprising news from the Marcus and McFeely or Russo Brothers presentation, given the fact that we have hours and hours of spoiler podcasts now out there with them talking about the film?
Yeah, I don't really know what's left for them to kind of reveal, unless it's like their reaction to, say, Spider-Man Far From Home and that kind of thing, which, you know, is something they're not tied to. But at this point, I just want kind of an answer from them on why they have such conflicting takes on what happened in the end. You would think, how does that happen when your writers and your directors are going out there doing press, that they're not on the same page? Or if there were disagreements, that, you know, you would at least have your talking points straight before you go out there and talk to the world. Frankly, I think they've kind of over-talked the movie at this point. I mean, I think you lose some of the magic of it when you start explaining away everything. You know, imagine if Christopher Nolan had spent the last, 6 years or so, you know, explaining away the ending of Inception. You know, like, I think at a certain point, maybe less is more when it comes to filmmakers talking up their projects after the fact.
All right.
Oh. All right, Jim. Well, my question isn't so much about what is at Comic-Con, but what's not there, because we're used to having all of the studios have these big presentations, and right now it seems like Marvel is the only game in town. So I know we've been speculating that maybe studios are going to start pulling out more and more from Comic-Con. Do you see this year as like the first year solidly saying this is the direction that Comic-Con is going to go? And how does that shape these kind of conventions for entertainment going forward?
That's a great question, because I do think that Comic-Con is kind of in a struggle right now to stay relevant, as more and more of these studios and networks kind of either launch their own events or they shift to other events like Brazil Comic-Con. You know, it's not really necessary to have to spend the amount of money that is spent on these kind of events. So I do think in terms of the where kind of Comic-Con goes from here, I think we can expect to see TV become increasingly more the focus of it, and there'll still be studios, but if you look at this year, I think it's only two big studio presentations, and then even Warner Brothers is just doing Scare Diego tomorrow night, they're only bringing it Chapter 2. And that I think is more probably a reaction or a result of AT&T buying them and being a little bit more cheap, frankly, with what they want to spend on. And from what I understand, it costs upwards of $5 million to put on a Hall H panel. So yeah, it's a lot of money.
So Jim, you reviewed Far From Home for IGN.com, right?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the Spider-Man reveal at the end and just the way that whole movie was presented?
I think it's a really exciting kind of direction, and I think it's a nice kind of capstone to the Tony Stark of it all, because, you know, Iron Man 1 ends with him kicking off the MCU with I Am Iron Man, and then, you know, this kid who is, like, stuck in his shadow, you know, getting outed to the whole world. I think it'll be interesting to see what sort of hints we get about what's next for Spidey at Comic-Con, although we should bear in mind that, you know, that's obviously a Sony release and they're not at Comic-Con, just Marvel Disney. So I'm not sure if we'll get kind of answers about what's next for Spidey there. But, yeah, I think, I thought the reveal was cool. I think you could have probably ended the movie with that, but it was, you know, it was a good mid-credit scene. I think at this point we're so engineered to kind of guess where a Marvel movie might go and stuff, and they're still fun and everything, but I did like that was sort of that was the surprise. I didn't see it coming. I didn't see that coming with this film. So that was nice to actually have kind of a surprise. For, you know, even Endgame and Infinity War, we kind of knew even the big moments would happen, right? So it was nice to have a complete surprise.
Yes, and you can make an argument that Far From Home is the most MCU-tied movie of almost any of the MCU movies thus far, because of the way they interweave Stark Industries and Tony Stark and Iron Man 1 into that film. And so,
So
it's going to be interesting to see if they make a deal.
That was my question. Since we have this rumor going around that if Far From Home doesn't make $1 billion, Sony would pull back from Spidey from the MCU. Just what do you think about that rumor going around, Jim?
Well, I know that the journalist who reported that rumor is, you know, he's a reputable guy. I just don't think it's, I don't see why is it in Sony's, why is it to Sony's benefit to pull away from Marvel? Clearly creative control was something they had before and they loused it up. So, you know, I don't see why they would want to kill a good thing here. Also, I think it's all moot because Spider-Man is currently at about $845 million worldwide. So it'll probably hit $1 billion, and if not, it'll get real close. But I just think it's a ridiculous sort of, it's a ridiculous sort of line to draw in the sand if that's coming from Sony, because you clearly have shown that you needed their help and you needed their input and their stewardship of that property in order to revamp what had been a lackluster last two films. You know, they might be going, they get a lot of acclaim, obviously, in an Oscar for Spider-Verse, but it's a different medium. And when you look at the grosses, I mean, Spider-Verse wasn't like a huge hit, but everyone loved it. So I don't think they could be, you know, I don't think they're going to be foolish enough to want to divorce Marvel just yet.
Yes, much to Chad's joy, a Oscar-winning Avi Arad.
Yeah.
So I have a question that's industry-related. So we've seen these memes over the last month with Marty McFly looking up at the marquee for theaters, seeing things that came from 1995, like Child's Play and Toy Story, at the box office. And we've just gone through this earlier in the summer, this intense debate about Booksmart and why it didn't make as much money as it possibly could have. What are your thoughts, especially with the Disney Plus announcement, with the HBO Now announcement, kind of where the industry is and what our future prospects are looking like, you know, as far as, you know, quote-unquote, original creativity at the box office?
Well, I mean, again, like, the audience has to show up for it, right? You know, it's people say they want it, and yet they don't go to support those movies by and large. Every now and then they will. I mean, I think you look at something like Midsommar, right? Is something that got people to go to the movie now. Whether or not they'll go again this coming weekend, we'll see. I think that is also an example of, like, you know, that sort of indie film that is an original property and is something that seems to excite people. But, you know, for every one of those, that also could have very easily have just gone to Netflix too. So I think Netflix is filling the void of the sort of, you know, riskier kind of properties for people, for studios, I should say, and for filmmakers. But unfortunately, they get buried in there because unless Netflix is going to really promote it heavily on their end, like they do with Stranger Things, you know, it's just going to disappear into your queue and you'll find it 2 years later.
That's why I'm interested to see what kind of ad buy and publicity buy they do for The Irishman.
Yeah, I mean, that one already, the fact that they the fact that they already ran an ad for it during the Oscars is kind of interesting. So we'll see too how that affects the industry in general too, because it's Scorsese, and then you have somebody like, you know, Spielberg, who is so kind of anti Netflix, although it's primarily because he has an Apple deal. So yeah, we'll have to see where all that goes.
Indeed. So Jim, we appreciate you coming on. What's the main thing that you're looking forward to with San Diego Comic-Con?
Just to get confirmation, really, on a lot of those Marvel projects, and to you know, just try to enjoy the experience. It's very overwhelming, but there is really nothing else quite like it. D23 is a lot of fun, but it's far more kind of contained and sane. So I think it's I think between the Marvel announcements, and I'm real curious to see how It Chapter Two looks. Also, I've realized I didn't answer your Game of Thrones question, so I think they'll address it, but they're not there to crap on themselves. So I think people need to kind of roll in their expectations or dial back their expectations a little bit, because they're not going all the way down there to walk around going shame, shame, shame. You know, that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah, I definitely don't anticipate a listing of the grievances and then a like we're sorry.
Yeah,
I still will never get over the Star Wars consent of the fandom thing that ran across the internet, you know, with all those and all the anger at Kathleen Kennedy. But Jim, we say this every year. We appreciate you coming on and previewing the show for us.
You know, of course, thank you.
You guys are living our dream, obviously, and we'll be very excited to see all the streaming footage and everything else that we get from Comic-Con for you guys. So, pub your stuff, and again, we appreciate you coming on.
Of course, thank you so much, guys, and have a great week.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Bye. Thanks, bye.
All right, so that is our good friend Jim Vavida from IGN.com. who is gracious enough to give us a few minutes of his time, you know, to talk about the upcoming San Diego Comic-Con 2019. So, Chad, what do we think of some of the things we heard there?
Because of the nature of this Comic-Con and as it pertains to movies, I think Jim is in line with what we all thought we were going to see, with outside of the whole Taika announcement that we just got this morning. Which,
how cool would that have been to be like, they're throwing up this slate and like you're anticipating sequels for Black Panther and for Doctor Strange and for Captain Marvel and maybe a confirmation of a third Spider-Man movie, and then just to get hit in the face with Thor 4 coming off of the Asgardians of the Galaxy at the end of Endgame, and the passing of the torch to Tessa Thompson and Valkyrie as the new leader of Asgard. So it would have been a huge play in that room.
So part of me wonders, why would you do this now? Because we're talking about Saturday. This is going
to
happen.
Like Saturday from like 7:30 Central Time to like 9:30 Central Time.
Yeah. So why not wait? You can hold, if you're Disney, you can hold this until Saturday. So part of me thinks, well, maybe they have something bigger that they're going to share with us on Saturday. I have no idea. That is just completely speculation. But logically, I would think that if you're going to let this drop now, that means you have something bigger at Saturday. I hope. Here's hoping that I'm right.
How big is Galactus?
I don't think we get that big. However, I think we get the vessel to get. If we got the vessel to get Galactus, you know, those four people that I keep talking about, I would love that.
As we've said on this podcast many times, you could go ahead and just roll that on out there. No one remembers.
At this point, it is amazing how just dead that specifically that last incarnation of Fantastic Four is. People remember the early 2000 ones a little bit, but the one that like stunk it up really bad, nothing. Nobody thinks of it.
I actually read some of Josh Trank's latest comments on that whole process and procedure, and then of course his comments on Landis, which were not exactly kind. Look, I mean, I've been on record as saying let's just get up through 2021. Like, we've got dates already staked out for those. It's three movies a year for 20 and 21. Let's do that. Let's go from there. That gives you six dates to put out. If you want to do three more, get us into 2022, that's fine. I'm not expecting an Avengers announcement. So, like, you can let that lie fallow for a little while because, you know, you're just, your incarnation of the Avengers just, you know, finished up. I think we'll get sequels for everybody, and we'll think we'll get a few originals thrown in there. The Eternals, I'm really interested because of all people, Devin Faraci, formerly of Birth Movies Death, tweeted out this week, Inhumans, it was last week.
Yeah.
The Inhumans date that they announced at that panel presentation in the theater was last week. So, like, we literally just finished the Phase 3 announcement that they did in that theater that day. And now we're going to just re-up for another 5 years is a kind of a daunting task. So that's why I would rather just go 2 years. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I can see with the amount of movies we know, it's going to cover 3 years. So I can see them just going ahead and, you know, just saying, okay, fine, these 3 years.
And I don't think you're going to get any, like, subtitle announcements. Like, no. when they did the Phase 3 announcement, it was Civil War, and it was Thor Ragnarok, and it was, you know, Captain Marvel, and it was Black Panther, you know, it was Doctor Strange. The deal for Spider-Man hadn't been made yet. I don't think we get, like, subtitles that people can delve into and go, I wonder what that is.
No, you might get subtitles. Well, I think out of the ones we have next year. Well, we only know that there will probably be two next year, which is...
There are three dates, though, right? On Box Office Mojo, right? They have three dates listed for 19.
Probably because they... Probably because they always list three. And they said they were going to always do three.
It's generally May, July, and November. That's what they try to stick to.
So, saying that out loud, so we're going to get Black Widow's May.
Look it up. Look at Box Office Mojo and see what the untitled Marvel movie dates are. Because I'm pretty sure there's three dates staked out for 2020, three in 2021, and three in 2022. That would bring it to nine. They're filming Black Widow right now. Yeah. I mean, we know that's coming. And Jolie's name has been attached to the Eternals for 6 months now.
We've had so many names attached for Eternals. It has to be the second one.
And Shang-Chi, we know we're getting an all Asian cast for. So,
but yeah,
I think Danny Yen's name has been thrown around for that, not as the lead, but as a part in the film.
Yeah. But I would imagine Shang-Chi would be, what's this year?
21. They said they're gonna start aiming to film at the end of the year.
Okay, so maybe that's the November one.
That would be three originals technically, because Black Widow would be considered an original, not a sequel.
And that's why I would think if they were gonna go another way, Doctor Strange.
Strange would be that November, because that November would be what, 2020? That's 4 years. So November of 16, November of 20?
Yeah.
With two more.
It's been 4 years already?
With two more.
Well, it will be 4 years then?
Well, the bill always comes due, Chad. It just takes a little while, okay? Like, you know, Etched 4 has got just finished up being Scar.
No, they only have two.
So they only have two stakes?
In 20. In May and November.
So that would be Black Widow and Eternals.
Yeah.
And then 21, you have the three dates?
Yes. February, May and November. And then 22, we have February, May, and November.
They like that President's Day corridor.
Yeah. There was one of these. Dang, I was listening to something else. One of these dates is like, excuse me if I'm wrong, but I think it's like Asian American Day or something like that.
Asian American Heritage Day.
Yeah, which is one of these days. And, yeah. And they were like, it's going to be Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of these February dates.
Well, I mean, it's proved helpful for Black Panther to release during Black History Month, so.
I mean, yeah, if that's the case, one of the February dates is Shang-Chi, one of them is Black Panther. We don't know which day is which, but that'll be how that rolls.
And we know that Coogler's now writing.
Yeah. So
that leaves what? That's 8 spots open? 3, 3, and 2.
Yeah.
So that means 8 dates. That brings you up through 2022?
Yep. And I think
one of those is Guardians.
So let's see. Let's see if we go in order. It'd be Black Widow, Eternals. Let's just say
Doctor Strange 2.
Doctor Strange 2, Shang-Chi.
Guardians.
We know Guardians. We know we got Captain Marvel, Black Panther. So there's one left that we just wouldn't know.
That could be your Spider-Man movie.
That could be your Spider-Man movie.
Thor 4.
Or Thor 4. So, yeah. We know all of the 8.
We know some combination of the 8.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure you're going to get, like, Captain Marvel, Kree Skull War. I don't think they're gonna drop, you know, subtitles. I think they're just going to drop, you know, Captain Marvel 2.
Yeah. And when they secure the dates, like for Spider-Man, do they still mark those as Marvel dates or Sony dates?
Marvel Sony, I think.
Okay. So, I think this just... I would assume that that would be listed on the dates I just looked at, but...
You know. I mean, we just... Like Jim said, there's no reason for them to pull out. No reason for them to pull out. They're on pace to do $1 billion. It's the highest grossing international Spider-Man movie of all time.
Yeah.
Like, you're on pace, dude. Yes, you had to give away a check for 2 films or 3 films. Congratulations. Even if you'd have gotten like 5% for every Spider-Man appearance in the MCU, which is something you might can collectively bargain the next time you negotiate the deal. That 5% of the total gross in Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame would still be minimal compared to the amount that the character's actually worth.
Yeah.
To those films. So
I mean, what Jim said was logically correct. However, I don't think the people dealing with Spider-Man and Sony are logical at all.
Well, Tom Rothman did just sign his girl from Fox 2000 to come over and sign a deal with HarperCollins Books and is going to be pumping out book adaptations for a while now. I mean, like, they're sound business people. And Rothman especially, even more so than Pascal, works with people he knows and or has known. And Pascal seems to be the go-between between Sony and Marvel on this because she had a working relationship with Kevin. And it's Pascal Pictures that produces all of the Spider-Man movies. So, I mean, I think Amy has a good working relationship with Sony, and Venom paid off for everybody. And, you know, that article, I just keep going back to that article we read months and months ago where it was like, Marvel's, Sony's okay with making a Venom movie that's standalone and separate and apart, because they can potentially pimp him out to Marvel to show up in the MCU. Now, my balking at that was always that, why is Kevin Feige going to take a character with which he had no creative control and place him in his universe? Yeah. That just makes
no sense.
No sense.
Honestly, what I wish would happen, what I ultimately wish would happen is that Disney would just take Spider-Man from Sony completely. But that's never going to happen unless Sony is in, like, the worst of shapes and back is against the wall. But what I would honestly like for them to do is like work out just some like infinite deal where Sony does nothing but collect a check while MCU makes the movies. Not the whole check, because that's not how, again, Disney's a company. That's not how they work. Work out a split where it's like, look, you still have the film rights. We can't do nothing about it. But if you just sit there, no creative, no nothing, you just sit there, we're going to give you this much. All you got to do is just sit there. That's it. And Sony should be like, thank you.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what goes down this weekend. Yeah. I mean, they can put on a heck of a presentation. We know that. They can do the big splashy thing. And there are tons of rumors about the original Avengers cast showing up and, you know, the big applause moments in that hall. I mean, Marvel's been going to Hall H since 2006. I mean, the original Ant-Man movie and Iron Man were announced in Hall H. That's right. In Hall H in 2006. You're talking about, you know, 13 years, and they probably only missed one or two of those years due to just either not having anything out or coming out or saving things for D23. So,
well, last year they've come after Endgame. They've said, like, well, we can't talk about Endgame, so we're just not going to come there. So
right, and they did a Spider-Man Far From Home panel. Sony did, I believe.
Yeah, Sony did, yeah.
So,
well, did they?
These, like Jim said, all these things kind of run together at a certain time.
They completely do.
Anything? What are the other things that we're looking forward to D20 for Comic Con? Because, like, okay, I'm gonna get some dark Fate footage. Let's let Tim Miller talk about why he wanted to do this and why James Cameron allowed him to do this, and then let's haul Cameron's rear end out of Australia to San Diego to sit on a panel for an hour and a half and talk about his creative vision for the Terminator franchise and why he thinks it's still relevant in the 21st century. And then let's hear Linda Hamilton talk about why she wanted to come back to the role. Like, let's actually have a Terminator Dark Fate panel and not just, like, you know, Ash Carson get up there and ask some questions of Tim Miller for, like, 10 minutes and then we all go home. Like, let's have footage, let's have a trailer, let's have a discussion, because this is it, baby. Like, this is it. You don't get no more shots after this. You bring back the original producer and director. You bring back a guy who's most famous now for doing Deadpool. And you bring back Linda Hamilton. And, of course, Arnold never went anywhere, so you can't miss him. So, let's... Like, it looks like we're redoing the same movie again, right? We're, you know, female Terminator instead of the male Terminator comes back in time to protect somebody who's important for the future to prevent them from being assassinated by a male Terminator. Great. Evolution of Terminators, they look more human, yada yada. You know, we just got finished with Alita Battle Angel. We know that technology, that CGI stuff exists. So, all fine. Let's have a conversation. Let's let Tim Miller go out there and trash the angry old white man again. Like, let's have a fun panel where we actually get some concrete information about a movie that comes out in November.
I keep forgetting that thing. That movie's a thing.
That movie is a thing, and that is more of a thing than Gemini Man, which freaking somebody gave Ang Lee money again. Someone keeps giving Ang Lee money to make effects, like, driven cinema. Like, the art house people want to complain about effects-driven cinema, yet one of their high priests is the one who, like, cannot make a movie without it. Like, freaking, you know, the long halftime, Billy Lynn's long halftime walk was nothing but, you know, built around 4K technology and high rate of frame and all that other stuff. You know, Life of Pi is nothing but pushing the limits of what computer technology can do. Like, the man doesn't know how to make a small indie film anymore. Like, you know, we're going to do Gemini Man and we're going to recreate Will Smith circa 1995. Like, we've all forgotten what Will Smith looked like in 1995. I mean, like, let's get him... Like, I'm more excited for Terminator Dark Fate than I have been about any of the other Terminator movies since T2. Let's get the people on stage and let's talk.
Let's see. The sentiment you're saying is kind of feeds into my overall excitement about Comic-Con, in that the studios have decided we're just not going to do those kind of things right now. Which is why I had the question for Jim. It's just because every year for Comic-Con, I know Marvel's going to give, like, this big show. And I know the other studios are going to present their things. And some of them I care about, some of them I don't. And then I know that inevitably Warner Brothers is going to open the show, at which point I'm praying that DC doesn't fall on their face. That's what my Comic-Con ritual has been for the past
5 years,
at least. And this year, Warner Brothers took their ball and went home, and along with them, everybody else did too. And now I'm like,
no Sony, no Universal, no Fox, because Fox doesn't exist anymore, mm-hmm. basically. No Warners.
Yeah, it just... So, there is a lot of TV stuff, which I know there's a lot of TV stuff for Comic-Con, but I've never really followed that so much. Like, I would see it as it pops in my timeline, but I don't seek it out. So, this year, it really feels like there's just this void. It's mostly because, you know, I follow the comic book stuff heavily, and DC is like my albatross, and there's just this void that is not there. Even though they have things they could promote.
And there's time, right? I mean, like... So, I'm going to press one of your trigger buttons right now.
Oh, boy.
So, Todd Phillips has come out today and said that the Joker film is going to make an awards play.
Oh.
And that it demands to be taken seriously, in his words. Okay.
So, the first part of what you said was fine, because I've been saying since this... like actually started coming to fruition.
They're going to play at the Venice Film Festival. The world premiere of this movie will be at the Venice Film Festival.
I'm not upset with that.
I am, because that's just strictly an awards play. And they don't care about anything else for this movie except trying to push Joaquin for a Best Actor nomination.
That's pretty much what I've been saying the whole time. So, like, everything he said, like, everything he said is what I've been saying. Even the second part is the sentiment I've been getting from Warner Brothers. However, it's also the sentiment that pisses me off, because it makes it feel like it's elevating the material. The material is kiddie and childish, so we're going to elevate it to get to the stature. And
it has nothing to do with comic books. I know a lot of people will be mad about that, but we didn't take anything from the comic books.
And, like, I don't... That sentiment doesn't upset me. You can make a story with a comic book character that has nothing to do with the previous...
Arcs
or anything. In the comics, they're called Elseworlds. You can take a character and you can put him somewhere else and has nothing to do with anything that came before. That's fine. My issue with it is because Warner Brothers cannot keep themselves from hurting themselves. They've done this while they have a... regular movie continuity that's in flux, and this is only going to further confuse people. Whereas if they had their ducks in a row, they make this movie, I'm like, that's fine. A lot of people aren't going to like this, but this is their version of a Joker. This is fine with me. I don't like the pretentious attitude with almost everybody involved in making this movie, that they're elevating it to this level to get this prestige because the regular material is not worth that. And that is...
We are bringing highbrow art to the lowbrow comic book film.
Exactly. And that is infuriating because there are plenty of intelligent, very smart, probably smarter than you that made this movie, that have been a part of making comic books through the years, that have read comic books, that enjoy comic books. And for you to say that, it's like a slap in the face.
I demand to be taken seriously, Chad. My film must premiere at a film festival during the awards circuit because I demand to be taken seriously. Here's my issue. You don't have to call him Arthur Curry or whatever.
Arthur Fleck.
Arthur Fleck or whatever your name you're going to use. You don't have to put him in clown makeup. You don't have to do any of that. This is Joaquin Phoenix doing a one man's descent into hell that is inspired by Last King of Comedy and Taxi Driver. Paul Thomas Anderson, for all I care, could be directing this film. This has nothing to do with comic books. This has nothing to do with the Joker except being a branded IP. Mm-hmm. This is a one man's descent into hell movie. You could make this on A24's $6 million budget and get awards play because it's Joaquin freaking Phoenix. You don't have to, as a studio, make an awards play with a comic book film. You could have just made this a literal Descent into Hell movie directed by Todd Phillips and starring Joaquin Phoenix, and you would have gotten the same awards chatter.
But you know what the difference is? It goes back to, look, we're taking this bottom-rung material and bringing it up here.
No one ever acted that way, though. Nolan was never that way toward the material. Everybody or other people around it were.
Yes.
But he never was, you know, downtrodden or belittling of the material.
Yeah, and my issues with those movies aside, I will agree with that. Nolan never looked... You can say what you will about those movies. You can tell Nolan never looked down on the material.
And he has reverence in some cases for certain aspects of the comics.
Yes. But this movie... And I haven't seen it, so I can't say that it doesn't or doesn't does or does not do that. But from everybody talking around it, you just get the feel that they look down on this stuff. And the reason they're doing it is because what you're saying is correct. If you have this regular person descend into madness that has nothing to do with the Joker, it is Joaquin Phoenix. He's going to put on this performance. It's probably going to be awards worthy. And that's fine. But when you slap this extra paint on and say, look, we're elevating this. Everybody thinks this is just gutter trash stuff that common people like, and we're going to take it and we're going to put it way up here. Give us the awards. That's what this is. And it suits what Warner Brothers sees themselves as, which is this prestige studio that's saddled with this kiddie stuff that they can't make work. But we want to be the top prestigious auteur-driven studio. So now we found a way to use this IP that we don't really like to get these awards. This is like their dream. But and again, they're going to learn all the wrong lessons. And I'm going to be doomed to wait until I'm an old-ass man to maybe finally get comic accurate movies with the characters they have that they've had since before I was born. They've had them since before I was born, and they've only they're just now making successful movies with people outside of two. We just got a successful movie, Wonder Woman. We just got a successful Aquaman movie. Before that, they can only do Batman and Superman. It took them
damn near
50 years to get a stable of four core characters that they made successful movies with. And two of them, one of them, they made two good movies, haven't made a good one. Well, I love Man of Steel, but for general consensus, haven't made a good one since. And the second one, two good movies, crap. Two good movies, eh. And then nobody likes the other ones. They're not good at this. And it's because they can't get out of their own way.
I will forever be ticked off at Christopher Nolan for having the opportunity to kill both Batman and Bruce Wayne and then to take his balls and go home.
Honestly, if he's making his opening, closing, his trilogy, yeah, he could have did it. It would have been fine.
And no other filmmaker for the rest of eternity will be given that kind of latitude to do that.
Nope, I don't. Well, because of Warner Brothers, maybe, because they're like, auteur. Maybe. If I were running, hell no, you're not killing him. Nope. Not until we establish this, and then you can get this auteur to make this his other kind of movie, Batman movie, and he can do whatever you want. Go nuts. But this here main line right here, nah. Actions come and go. Bruce Wayne is eternal, baby.
And that's what frustrates me, is the fact that Nolan had that clout and could have made the decision and then did the end around. Oh, no, he's sitting there with Selena Kyle and having breakfast and, you know, Alfred is crying because he realizes that Master Wayne has finally achieved the life that he was supposed to have.
I mean, walking into that movie, I would have thought that this Batman was on the path to that...
Self-sacrifice.
Well, no, on that path of Batman Eternal, because I didn't think it was going to be the large year gap and we weren't dealing with, retirement age Batman. But watching the movie, I'm like, well, he has clearly made up his mind about what kind of Batman this is. Do what you want. Go nuts.
Right. And if Warner's was going, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to talk about Kong Skull Island, Kong versus Godzilla. They're going to talk about Birds of Prey.
But yeah, I mean so from their DC side, they have at least
Birds of Prey, Joker. Wonder Woman 2, which we knew Wonder Woman 2 was going, right? Because Patty put out the poster.
Yeah.
So that was something they were intending on doing at Comic-Con, I'm sure. I mean, freaking Patty put out a statement on Twitter that day saying that they were disappointed they weren't going to Hall H, but you know, here's the poster instead. So it would have been Wonder Woman 2, Aquaman 2 probably would have gotten confirmed. You could have done an update on the Flash movie that kind of might have turned around some of the bad PR that you've been getting on that franchise for the last month. Birds of Prey.
If I were
them, Venom movie, if you were Sony.
Well, if I were Warner Brothers, I'd have brought Joker for sure, Birds of Prey, and Wonder Woman.
And that's an hour and a half panel right there. That's 2 hour panel right there.
But they never do just DC themselves. They want to do, they do all of their slate. So, three DC movies, with the main event being Wonder Woman 84. You can show some footage. You have that poster. It's less than a year away. It's probably gonna get your biggest buzz because it's your most well received movie you have. I think that would have been smart.
And that's why there's a gap in 2020.
Yeah, because they pushed it out.
There's a gap in 20 because Marvel had that date staked out for Guardians and then had to pull Guardians.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And so that's why they moved Wonder Woman back to the summer.
Yeah, that's right.
Because originally Wonder Woman was supposed to be November of 19.
Yeah, that's right. It's supposed to come out this year. But either way, you had three viable DC movies to show. I know there are other
ones. And you have Kong versus Godzilla, which you're coming off. I mean, I think Jim's right that, like, if the Roller Coaster Man had not been fired, and AT&T would not have bought them, that we probably would have gotten a Warner Brothers panel. But, like, right now the studio is so much in flux that it's probably best to kind of sit out. Now, that's not the answer for Sony. That's not the answer for Universal. It's, you know.
I think for the rest of the studios, it's just a matter of
what do we have, you know?
What's the cost benefits? Because it is very true. You're showing all this stuff at Comic-Con to people you already have their money.
This is what Jim has said over and over, which is that if you want a positive reaction for anything, you go to Hall H because, I mean, they cheered Aeon Flux, you know, with Charlize Theron back in the day as, like, great. Like, they are your faithful. You are preaching to your faithful. Which makes sense for Marvel to go there because their faithful need to worship and give praise to the Almighty for the gift that they were given in Endgame. But let's just say, for example, Universal. Does it really make sense for Universal to go and take Jurassic World 3 and bring Trevorrow out there and talk about what that movie is going to be down the line? Does it make any sense for Disney to bring Star Wars there when they've just had celebration in May and April, and now you've got D23 coming in August? I mean, it's just like you said, a cost benefit analysis. And I'm excited about the Terminator Dark Fate panel. I'm excited about getting to hear the Game of Thrones writers defend their actions to the fan base, who will step up to the microphone and very gladly ask them why they did X, Y, or Z. I'm excited for those little small things. I'm excited to hear Marcus and McFeely and the Russos talk about this movie for the bajillionth time. And I think that the biggest conflict between those four guys with regards to the film is really more about, was Cap worthy to pick up the hammer in Age of Ultron, or was he not? And the Marcus and McFeely have kind of been on that train of, he had the secret with Bucky, like, that was weighing him down at the time. He knew that he had the foreknowledge that Bucky had murdered Stark's parents. He was hiding that from Tony at the time. He wouldn't tell him for another year. He was weighed down with that. Now that that secret is out in the open, and now that he's been to defenses with Tony, and they're working together again, he's now worthy. He no longer has that sin, so he can pick up the hammer. And the Russo brothers are like, yeah, he could have picked up the hammer and hit Thor in the head with it in old Age of Ultron because he's always been worthy. He just chose not to because he didn't want to embarrass Thor.
I'm going to firmly tell you that I am on Team Russo on this one. I think I'm on Team Russo for every dispute they have between the writer and directors on this movie. My only defense is, you shouldn't be able to budge the hammer if you're not worthy. It moved. He knew it could move. He left it alone. And, I mean, so if I'm in a fight for my life with a guy that is beating up the two guys I have with me that are more powerful than me, am I going to waste time trying to pick up a weapon that I know I can't pick up? Or I ain't got nothing else. I know I can pick that up. Let's just get... there's no time for sparing anybody's feelings. We're all going to die. Throw the hammer. That is my logic. I don't care what the writers say.
Still the biggest pop in a movie full of pops. That is...
Yeah.
The biggest and the cheapest.
It's not cheap if it's earned. And
every pop of theirs is not earned.
Except
for the Pepper Potts pop. That is... That was definitely earned.
You find a way to drive it back over there. I'm steering it back over. No.
You can get your rescue pop vinyl now at a Hot Topic.
It was 2015 that scene happened in the Age of Ultron. 4 years later, that is a earned pop.
Indeed. So what else are you looking forward to? Anything else? I mean, I'm kind of disappointed Tarantino isn't bringing Hateful Eight. I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I figure you might screen it because it's the opening week, I think, or it's the week before the opening week.
I think it's the week before.
By the way, there's a podcast there where he talks about old Westerns and old movies and his new movie for like 2 hours and 45 minutes. It's insane.
Yeah, there's nothing that he doesn't like doing is talking.
Well, like literally 2 hours and 45 minutes of him talking about how he programmed his theater. It's... weird.
Oh.
And he's now talking about loopholes so that if he directs a Star Trek movie, it doesn't count toward his 10.
Yeah, I saw that. Whatever, Quentin.
I mean, he's already at 10 because if you count Kill Bill as one movie.
Yeah, that's right.
And Death Proof is part of Grindhouse, so you count it as its own movie or part of one movie.
Yeah, I would think you would count that as one. I don't know how. Let him have his loopholes, whatever. He doesn't have to stay to 10. Nobody said he had to stay to 10. It was a Quentin Tarantino invention.
It was Tarantino saying that he's never seen a director who did more than 10 films of any quality. Like, the quality of director, his argument has always been that the quality of director's work goes down after 10. And so, why do I want to make more than 10? When people's quality of work just decreases significantly.
Okay, so he's saying after a director makes 10 in a row.
Just 10 movies.
10 movies, period.
10 films, period.
After that, it falls off a cliff.
Right.
I really want to go put that to the test because I know there are some great directors that make way more than 10, and I know that they had some good stuff that came after number 10. They may have been some crap in between 1 through 10, but I know they had some good stuff that came like 11 and beyond. I don't know if I feel like being so petty as to do this endeavor, but I almost want to because that sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, artists, they're different people. So, I mean, what else are we looking forward to? I mean, that's like... there's no Transformers. Paramount's not bringing anything.
Thank God.
There's no G.I. Joe. Paramount's not bringing anything.
Is that a thing?
So Sony's not bringing anything, so you get no Venom 2. You don't get no Jumanji 2. Or Jumanji. Ooh. I'm sorry. Yes, Jumanji 2. Not Jumanji 3. Jumanji 2. Jumanji the next level.
They could have brought that, but...
Jumanji 2.
What they should have done was bring that this... I'm gonna call it. I've seen nothing about this movie. I'm just gonna say it's gonna be a turd on a plate, Morbius movie. They should have brought that to try to gum up some goodwill.
I mean, they will cheer anything. So I mean, you bring out Jared Leto and let him be creepy in a vampire outfit and
exactly, they'll cheer anything. Now, the flip side is, do you want to be that thing that they finally turn on? Because it could very well be that.
Well, I mean, for all we know, Jared Leto is such a method actor. I mean, he might be cosplaying as Morbius on the convention floor this weekend, and no one would know him.
Nobody would, and nobody would care. I don't care. The only other thing that was interesting to me for a movie that I will never, ever see is I didn't realize they were bringing the It 2 thing.
To Scare Diego. That was the only thing. And that makes the most sense, because that's September. You're 2 months out. And you've only had to put out the one trailer.
But since I looked up Warner Brothers' schedule, if you're bringing that, Dr. Sleep is like coming up after that too.
But is Dr. Sleep really? I think there might be a Dr. Sleep panel actually. Is Dr. Sleep really an SDCC thing? Like, I mean, you're talking about a sequel to The Shining that was written years later, and The Shining itself is not a cult like. If you were going to, like, New York Comic Con, or you were going to, like, a horror convention, Like, I could see it, but not necessarily, like, SDCC level.
But it's all Warner Brothers, and it's all Stephen King, and if I really want to, like, try to...
pair it up.
Like, goose up this movie.
Hammer home the Stephen King connection.
Yeah.
Because I think there's another studio that has a... I think there's another studio that has a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest movie about Nurse Ratched. Like,
I did hear that, yeah.
Like, just focused on Nurse Ratched before the events of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, King's such a prolific writer, all this crap's out there. And post-it, everybody was trying to buy up everything they could. So. Yeah.
I just thought that it's... Everybody else doesn't have the benefit of being the studio that put it out. Which is why a lot of people are going after his stuff again anyway. So why not capitalize since you're already...
doing a sequel.
Yeah.
That is, you know, got a whole bunch of its own issues. Your thoughts on the internet burning to the ground over Letty Wright, possible... or not Letty Wright. Captain Marvel.
Just because you just said
Rambo.
That. I can't... think of
Monica Rambeau.
Yeah, what is her real name? It's killing me now. Lashana Lynch.
Yes.
Your
reaction to the internet burning to the ground to the possibility that she could already be 007 when she goes to get her retired Bond.
My reaction to this is, this shows that people only read the headlines. Because all the headlines, all they said was, a black woman will be the new 007. That's it. And they all did it on purpose, and the internet went to burn it down.
Well, it is the week where we're telling people to go back where they came from, so.
Not doing it.
So.
But, like, I saw the headline, and I'm like, at first I was like, okay. I really was just like, okay. And then I was like, I know she's not playing James Bond. And then I clicked on the article, and it says, James Bond retired. Which you knew if you watched the last movie. I barely remember that movie, but I know that happened. James Bond retired.
Yeah, Spectre literally ends with him riding into the sunset.
So when he comes back, there's a person that has the... We all know 007 is a code name.
And somebody had to get their license to kill.
Somebody else got it. That is it. That's it.
And it sets the standard and the precedent that you can come back later with a female James Bond.
Well, I think this sets the precedent that a lot of people have thought that James Bond was actually part of the code name, but with her just getting 007, it means that James Bond is really just James Bond. So it gives you
007.
You can do different things with 007. And that's all that is. That's all that's saying. It's not saying they're changing James Bond's gender. All they're saying, they're not saying that they're changing James Bond's race, even though... really and truly, nerds, there's nothing wrong with that. Just so you know.
And Bond is the most problematic character in terms of racism and sexism and colonialism in modern cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, literally Fleming's novels are all a product of the 1930s and 40s, you know, imperialistic mindset of the time.
Yeah, and the movie has slowly started to change, but...
Moonrocker was 40 years ago now.
She is just she has the code name 007. If you click on the article to read it, you will understand it. If you're still mad about it, then you have some really bad issues. The rest of you nerds, how about you like to click on everything else? How about you click on the article and read the first paragraph? That's all it took.
Indeed, and this had been out there in the ether for a little while that they might go this way. So the sad part is it's not confirmed. So, Broccoli and them could decide to back out of this?
I hope not. Not for this.
They could. And they could have never even been intending to do it at all. It might just look that way to the internet, and with a white safari jacket and the like. So,
I mean, if that was not their plan at all, then good to them. If it was their plan, they're letting the internet trolls scare them. That's bad business. Don't do that.
You're talking about a production that has seen multiple people injured, at least one person killed, and, you know, multiple writers having to be replaced, and, like, trouble between the director and the producer, and the star breaking his ankle. Like, it has been a really, really bad, like, rough production for Bond 25.
Yeah.
Of which we still don't have a title, by the way, which is supposed to come out in April, I think, of 2020. Either April or November. May have pushed it back.
Probably November.
But it's 2020. We don't have a title. They did the press conference. They haven't given us a title. And now we've got Blofeld coming back. So.
I don't know what to think about
this. There were other characters from Spectre that were being brought back. So it didn't make sense that you were going to continue that continuity. Because, I mean, for the most part, your Bond actor has his continuity. Like, you know, Brosnan's movies all take place with Brosnan in that, in the events all reference each other.
Mm-hmm.
The same way with Craig. Like, Craig's Bond starts with getting his license to kill in Casino Royale. So, like, this is his continuity, his timeline. You can't just ignore things. Like, they even continue on talking about Quantum in Spectre. Yeah. I mean, in Skyfall, they talk about Quantum. So, I mean, like, it's his continuity. It's his time as Bond. So, you know, it begins and ends. And yes, you can make the argument they should have let him ride off in the sunset and restarted with Bond 25. But they didn't. So, this is what you got.
Yep.
And if you're upset about the possibility of, a Pennywise or somebody being, or a Moneypenny or someone of that ilk filling the role of a secret agent in the British government, you got problems, because there are brave women serving in the intelligence communities around the world every day defending and protecting your freedom.
Yep.
The CIA is not an exclusive boys club. Matter of fact, you've got a woman running the CIA right now. I don't see anybody barking about that. So, yeah. So we will be here. We will be here. We will be talking Comic-Con when we get, you know, once the weekend wraps up. Me and Chad will be in constant communication. I've got alerts set to my phone for when different panels are supposed to go off local. So we will be keeping an eye on our Twitter feeds at those points in time. Until then, hopefully next time we speak, we'll have an actual firm slate announcement.
We'll have something.
We'll have something, unless he's just doing the magic diversionary trick and he's just going to spend the runtime of the panel, talking about the good old days when he started to make Thor the Dark World. And this is, again, our earnest and sincere plea. We thank Jim for coming on.
Mm.
Thank him for his time and for giving us that opportunity to speak with him regarding Comic-Con. But this is also our earnest and sincere plea, not to Pepper Potts, not to Gwyneth Paltrow, but to Kevin Feige. Question time, sir. Our current list stands at 105 questions that span 12 years. So if you would like to come on our podcast, you have an open invitation. This is the Lorne Michaels trying to get the Beatles on Saturday Night Live in the first couple of years. I will continue to make this pitch every single time that a major Marvel event comes up. Please come on our podcast and speak with us regarding your studio's great output. For Chad, I'm Brian. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mess Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.